on the opposite side of the coin, if someone does something good for you, and it's just for you, it's not for anybody else, and you're so happy, you're so touched, and you cry, and you thank them, but it's for you, is a sign of a very big ego. Very, very big ego. Why? Because they're doing something for you, so you feel touched for you. You feel touched and you feel moved for you. Then it's like, wow, my ego's so big. On the other side of the coin, if they do something harmful for you, to you, and you feel very angry and you feel very upset and you can't let go, you can't hold it, you can't let it go and you hold it, it means that your ego is very strong again. Why? Ego manifests either as, inverted commas, happy or sad. It's the same emotion playing games on you. So if you hear that people did something bad to you, you don't feel much. Whatever. You forgive and let go. Your ego's lesson. If you feel that they have done something for other people that is damaging and not good and harmful, and you feel, inverted commas, upset or angry, or you want to do something, that's a very good sign. That means the ego is getting less again. Because don't mistake anger the wrong way. So people are doing other things that are harmful for others, or you see other people's sufferings, or you see other people's delusions, and you see other people falling down, and you really, really feel upset, you feel angry, you feel you need to do something, and you do something, you hold your vows, you do more dharma, you push yourself, you sleep less, you become less greedy, you straighten your manners out. If you do all that, it's a very powerful sign that your ego is getting better. Because that type of anger is not really anger, it's kind of like divine anger, like Yamataka. Yamataka is always an anger. Vajragini is an anger. But it's a divine kind of anger because it's not arising from delusionary states or delusions. Similarly, if you see good things happen for other people and they become liberated, they change, they transform, they become better people, and you feel overwhelmingly happy and you feel overwhelmingly moved and touched and you cry, that type of tear or that type of happiness and joy is again divine. And it creates a divine. Why is that? Because you're not crying or feeling happy or touched for yourself or something for you. You're feeling it for other people. So therefore, our mind can be deceptive. It can be deceptive. Anger can be positive. Tears can be negative. Anger can be negative. Tears can be positive. So what's very important is in Dharma, you don't have imputations. Just because that person cries, it means they're very soft and they're very nice and they're very loving. It could mean they have a huge ego that's bigger than normal, that's why they're always crying. Then you can always see that people with anger, or they're direct or they're loud, doesn't mean that they're bad or they're hurtful or they want to harm you. Because that anger is not necessarily real anger. Real anger arises from, I've been hurt. I've been damaged. So if the other group is a different race, your race, your countrymen, or your family, and you get hurt and you feel angry, that's also not divine anger. Why is that not divine anger? It's something associated with yourself again. So in Buddhism, we want to achieve equanimity. That equanimity is a natural state of mind. That natural state of mind of equanimity. Equanimity? That natural state is equanimity. If your natural state of mind is not equanimity, you cannot become a Buddha. There is no such thing as a Buddha. If there's no such thing as a Buddha, there's no Buddha images, there's no divine paintings and statues, there is no sadhanas, and there's no enlightenment. Also, there's no protectors, and the protectors cannot show you signs or help you. So the protectors cannot help you, it must be your delusionary mind making up things. That means there is no oracles. That means there is no Dharma protectors that enter an oracle and talk. That means the Dalai Lama is not enlightened, that what he speaks is BS. That's not the case. What the Dalai Lama speaks is not BS. No. And Dharma protectors can take trance. They are a different mind. They are a different mind entering. So the Dharma protectors can exist if an enlightened mind can exist. If an enlightened mind can exist, if an enlightened mind can exist, then equanimity must exist. If equanimity exists, hence it must be a natural state of mind. Because the natural state of mind is enlightenment. Hence, appearances when we don't have education, when we don't have dharma, we don't have knowledge. Appearances can be self-deceptive and deceptive. Why is that? A tear can be ego, and anger can be compassion. Anger can be ego, and tears can be compassion. It depends on where it arises from. So when you see people always cry when they get something, when you give them something, when you say something, they're crying. It doesn't mean they're compassionate or they're soft or they're nice. It just means they have a huge ego. I got something. Snooze, boo-hoo, boo-hoo. So therefore, you have to check carefully to not let your mind trick you. That's why am I saying that? I'm not criticizing anyone out there. I'm telling you how to check your mind. That a mind that has equilibrium, neither here nor there, hate or love, is a natural state of mind. Then you say, if it's a natural state of mind, and if it's free of love or hate, then how does it benefit people? How does it become a Buddha? That natural state of mind that doesn't love or hate isn't love or hate from enlightenment. It is love or hate that arises from the natural state of mind. That's love or hate free of delusions, not arising from delusions. So that love or hate doesn't arise from delusions. It is a spontaneous nature of the mind, which is pure and luminescent and clear, which thinks to benefit others, who has the ability to benefit others, who is always benefiting others, who benefits others nonstop and spontaneously. Why is that mind always in a spontaneous mode of benefiting others, naturally, always, without needing awareness? Because it has arisen from that mind. That means that mind has eradicated the ego. Since that mind has eradicated the ego, it doesn't have to fight the ego using awareness as a tool to remember benefiting others. If you have to remember benefiting others and you keep slipping and slipping and you make jokes about you slipping, it's a clear indication that it is possible to achieve that, because when you don't slip, you can do it. It's a clear indication and proof that that type of mind exists. Yet when you slip, it's also proof to you that you have a long ways to go, and therefore you should go that route and go that long way. Because if you don't go, that long way stays long. It stays long forever. So hence, a natural state of mind is equilibrium, equanimity. Equanimity doesn't mean feelingless or no feeling or none. Equanimity meaning all those who are close and near that benefit you or not, that have harmed you or not, you equally help them and wish them happiness and liberation. That arises from a mind that has equilibrium, that has equanimity. Equanimity doesn't mean you're numb to pain and you're numb to happiness. That's not equanimity. That is false equanimity that arises from ego. Some people say, oh, after a while they feel numb to things, they don't feel anything. Numbness is not anything near equanimity. Numbness is only another extension of the ego protecting itself, not taking responsibility to learn more, do more, overcome, help more, or feeling distraught at so much that you have done, yet you get nothing back, yet it's disappointing. So one who feels numb to dharma, numb to doing other people's work to benefit them, numb to help others, or numb that you feel disappointed that no matter how much you help, it still goes down and they cannot be helped. If you feel numb, it is not a good state of mind to be in. That is not a positive state. Why? Because that numb state of mind is another extension of the ego covering up for not wanting to do more to overcome that numbness. You basically don't care. So if you don't care, that is not your natural state of mind. It cannot be a natural state of mind. Hence, divine anger, supreme form, extremely great fury, intrepid one, enjoyer of supreme objects, who acts in order to attain to others, to Yamataka, I bow down to you. Supreme form, extremely great fury, intrepid one, enjoyer of supreme objects, who acts in order to attain to hearts attain, to the Vajra-terrified, I bow down to you. Supreme form meaning the Buddha body. Extremely great fury means most angry. Of all the deities, most angry, extremely great fury. Intrepid one. Supreme form, supreme great fury, intrepid one, enjoyer of supreme objects. That who can enjoy all things in samsara without being tainted or stained, because the enjoyment doesn't arise from attachment. It arises from beneficial offering. Injurious Miyachis, who acts in order to tame the heart to tame. Who acts in order to tame the heart to tame. That means Yamataka specifically uses the anger energy, wrathful energy, to tame those who are hard to tame. To your supreme form, to the Vajra terrifier, I bow down. To the Vajra terrifier. Terrifier means something that frightens you, something that scares you, something that wakes you up. But the Vajra terrifier means, Vajra means adamantine or diamond, one that is enlightened. So that one that uses angry energy or wrathful energy from an enlightened state of mind, from great compassion. To the Vajra terrifier, I bow down. I bow down to you, O Yamataka, who uses the wrathful energy to subdue those who are not able to subdue. And that energy is embodied in all Buddhas. That energy is embodied in all enlightened beings who will use wrath, control, desire, peace, many methods to control the mind of sentient beings. To sentient beings whose imputation is wrong, they will see it as positive, negative, desirous, good, bad. They will see it like that. But to an enlightened being, it is not. How do you check if the enlightened, if that person's action is correct or not? Over time, does that person's action of anger, desire, peace, wrathful control bring more benefit, bring more people to the Dharma, change people's minds, inspire people more, or does it harm more? When you get angry more and more, do you lose friends? Do you become more depressed? Do you bring unhappiness to others? But a person who's attained, their anger, their desire, and their controlling actions, whatever wrathful actions, over time, you will see that it actually transforms others. It changes others. It keeps some people under control. So therefore, you can check from what type of mind their actions arise from. From what type of mind their wrathful, peaceful, controlling actions come from. So hence, a state of an enlightened mind, a state of an attained mind, is anything that goes toward equanimity, any stage. So you have first level, second level, third level, fourth level. Doesn't matter what level you have. Any level towards that is going toward the state of equanimity. And when people say it's hard and it's difficult, they are misconstruing it. In fact, not having the state of equanimity is more harder and more difficult because you remain as you are. It's even more hard and more difficult. Why? Why is it more hard and more difficult? Because you have already gotten used to it. And you figure that's the way it is, and you don't have wisdom to see through it. So therefore, an enlightened being or an attained being will use wrathful actions, and each person has primary actions. Some will use desirous actions, some will use more wrathful, some will use more peaceful. Each person will manifest enlightenment differently to other people. Why? Due to the time. Due to the place. Due to the people. And due to that person's or that lama or that being's own previous life's prayer. Their lineage of incarnations. That's all of us. We all have a lineage of incarnations. And what do they primarily manifest as? Wrathful, peaceful, whatever. So therefore, how do you check if their wrathful actions is really wrathful? If the things around them grow. Simple as that. If the things around them grow and it doesn't grow for you, your peaceful action is fake peace. Their wrathful action is genuine compassion. That's how we can check with logic again and meditate. So therefore, my point here is deception. Self-deception is very, very powerful based on not having knowledge and not having dharma. Even having dharma, forgetting the dharma due to not contemplating or putting into practice is our biggest enemy, laziness. Very big enemy. So if we're still miserly, yet we've been told so many times to share, and we have so many examples of sharing, we have so many examples of people sharing, yet we still don't share, and we still find it painful to share. We don't have guru devotion. Therefore, we can't turn other people's minds around. We cannot turn other people's minds around. Therefore, when we say we want to benefit all sentient beings, it is a false, not a real motivation, not a real prayer. It is actually something to feed your ego again. I wish to benefit all sentient beings, just to sound good for now, just to push away our guilt for now. Because if you genuinely feel that, if your guru says, be generous, and you're always seeing examples of generosity, you will be generous, you will open up, and you will do it at your own expense. Why? Because you have guru devotion, or you see the logic behind it. Similarly, if your guru tells you, don't steal, or don't be sneaky, and you continuously do it, same example. Same example. So therefore, what's very important is self-deception arises from laziness. We realize, and we continue to do it. We don't realize because we don't want to realize. We don't want to think more. We don't want to remember. And we think it's easier not to remember. It's not easier because every minute you create horrible karma. Horrible. Horrible karma and you dedicate it to your loved ones. Horrible karma for yourself that you dedicate to yourself. Horrible karma constantly and always. Why? We cannot abide in a state of no karma and not creating any karma. It's impossible. Even sleep creates negative karma to a certain extent. It's impossible because we arose from desire. We're abiding in desire. And we die by desire and we arise again by desire. Unless the Buddha is wrong. So therefore we need to challenge ourselves already. The state of equanimity starts by being generous. Starts by being patient. Starts by stop challenging others and challenging ourselves. It starts by endurance and effort, not giving up. And it starts from a genuine sense of taking responsibility for everything around you and not blaming, but taking responsibility. When you take responsibility, your whole attitude will change. You can endure suffering for others. You can endure pain and sickness for others. You can endure lack of sleep. You can endure anything for others. Anything that happens, you will be happy it happens to you. You think that's not possible. It is possible. Because there's this type of suffering called suffering without suffering. It means to you it looks like that person's suffering, but that person's not suffering. Because that person wants to take that from you so you don't suffer. So when they get it from you, they see you not suffering and they suffer, they're very happy. They're very, very happy. Hence, Kuan Yin we respect when she prays to take rebirth in the three lower realms. She prays to take rebirth in hell in order to eliminate your sufferings. Hence, when Jesus Christ died on the cross, he forgave those who tormented and killed him. And he prayed to his Father and said, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. And that's why his cult and his thought and his idea grew and spread in the world. Because it's the thought of truth, accepting other people's problems onto yourself. So universally, whatever country, whatever race, whatever religion, the thought of taking pain and suffering for others onto oneself and quietly and secretly is true spirituality. That is a true mode and true method to equanimity. And we should strive towards that. In every moment of our day, to challenge our bad habits, to push ourselves, to not endanger others, and not bring any type of harm to others. To consciously always fight that again and again and again. And together with our practice, collecting merit to fuel that type of practice, then definitely you'll see change. Definitely you'll see change. If there is no such thing as change, there's no disparity in the thinking of spiritual minds. Disparity means some is very spiritual, some is not very spiritual, some is mediocre. So that disparity arises from what? God created? No. Your environment created? No. You see, environment is a third result of karma, as that teaching I gave you. The third result of karma is environmental. Remember that. So hence, even your environmental conditioning with your parents that make you grow up to be like them, positive or negative, is a result of your throwing karma, is a result of your karma. The third result is environmental. So hence, you can't blame your environment. I grew up, I was raped, you know, I was abused, I was beaten every day, I was locked in, I didn't meet anybody. You can't use that as an excuse. Why can't you use that excuse? You can't use it because you create the karma to be thrown into that situation as an environmental situation. So therefore, forgive, that heals. Pursue, that makes you grow. And don't give up on yourself. Why is that? If you don't give up on yourself, you inspire yourself, you inspire others, and you open the doors of the merits you collected. You didn't also live lives of negative karma. Only creating negative karma, you also create a positive karma. Because where our minds and moods go up and down, we do good and bad, we collect good and bad karma. Just look in one day how many good and bad thoughts you've had. So that is a continuation of the habituation of good and bad thoughts in the last week. Because that last week you had good and bad thoughts, today you're going to have good and bad thoughts because it feeds it. So if you had good and bad thoughts today, you had it last week. If you had it last week, you had it last year. If you had it last year, you had it last lifetime. So it goes up and down. Because that goes up and down, you don't feed the bad, you feed the good. And if you persistently push it is possible. If you can, if you persistently don't push because you don't believe it's possible, you believe, or you don't accept it, then you cannot believe in a Dharma protector, because Dharma protector arises directly from that. Very simple, an enlightened mind. So therefore, the six paramitas I always talk about in different different types of methods, different modes and different examples, is very relevant to all of us. So therefore, tonight's short little Dharma talk I gave you for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, is based on having a mind that has equanimity. And that equanimity is a pure state of mind. And not to be deceived, deceive others and deceive yourself with wrong, imputated conclusions. Wrong, imputated conclusions. Anger is bad, peaceful is good. Tears is good, anger is bad. All those are wrong imputations. That doesn't mean everybody who is angry is practicing Dharma. That does not mean everybody who cries has a big ego. No, you have to check. Everything is individual. Okay, does everybody understand that? Questions about that? Yes.